Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We're now less than 3 weeks away from the midterm elections, and voters in Massachusetts' 3rd District will choose a new member of Congress. It's a sprawling district represented by retiring Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas for more than a decade. Earlier this week, we heard from Rick Green, the Republican, seeking the seat. Today, we turn to the Democratic nominee, Lori Trahan. Trahan faced a tough primary fight, coming out ahead of 9 other candidates and after a recount, it was determined that she won by less than 150 votes. Trahan is a small business owner and former chief of staff to former Congressman Marty Meehan. Lori, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So let's start with your experience. As we said, you served as a chief of staff and aide to Marty Meehan when he was in Congress. What did you learn from that job that made you want to run for office and not run away?
I think what gives me confidence that I can be a good representative for this district is my experience working in that office, because I got to know the district really well. I mean, I grew up in Lowell, and I've lived in the district my whole life, but you get a view of all the issues affecting the district, and they're diverse, right? I mean, there's towns like Concord where passing legislation to protect the Sudbury, Concord, and Assabet Rivers is very important to them. And then you could be working on an economic development project in Lowell or Lawrence, something that can really transform the trajectory of a community. So, I really got rooted in the district and the issues that were important to those communities. Mm. You know, I also had a fair amount of experience down in Washington. Eventually became the congressman's chief of staff, worked on campaign finance reform, and learned how to work in a bipartisan way. That was a heavily negotiated bill. And so I think
campaign
those,
finance reform.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. It took a long time to pass. And, it was an experience in how you can find common ground with Republicans to pass landmark legislation.
But now, yikes, right? I mean, all we hear about is how divisive, Congress is and what's going on now. And you'd have to say, right, it's gotten worse since the days when you were working with Marty Meehan. So
yes.
I wonder, what, if you're elected, would you do to try to help improve that situation?
Yeah,
I think that's the million-dollar question, right?
It
Everyone
sure
wants
is.
To figure that out.
It sure is. You know, I'm a proud lifelong Democrat, but running for office was never part of the plan. It wasn't. After my time with the congressional office, I actually shifted and went to the private sector. But I did feel like the 2016 election changed everything. And I think it is my experience working across industries with business executives, with entrepreneurs, that reminded me when disruption happens, change follows. Now, we've never seen a more disruptive force in Washington than this president and this administration. But I think what gives me a lot of optimism is that these midterms are the change that follow. And I do think that there's an opportunity to break the gridlock, to change business as usual. I mean, when you have this many people across the country who have never run before, never thought of running before, frankly, all going to Washington at the same time, I think that that new breed of leader, the freshness, will help, stir things up and maybe change that partisan politics that we're seeing right now.
Yeah. I believe Ben described though for sure as a pragmatic progressive. What does that mean to you?
I really want to be effective. I really want to get things done. I embrace a bold vision of where our country needs to go. But I also, I think that there's an opportunity after these midterms to really hear the country and the plight of working class families and roll up our sleeves and get things done. So, I'll protecting. I was just yesterday in Lawrence with Leader Pelosi and Congresswoman Clark and Congresswoman Tsongas, and we're talking about the importance of protecting people who have pre-existing conditions and their security and having insurance coverage. I mean, that's under attack. And the pragmatic side of me is, you know, we have to have a bold vision for transforming our healthcare system. But in the meantime, I mean, we have to really safeguard those principles and the dignity that the ACA gave so many people. People like my dad, who has multiple sclerosis, and really did live in fear that his insurance would be taken away. And we have to build on that, and we have to improve it. I mean, the reality is premiums are too high, prescription drug costs are too high.
But then what do you tell the people in your district who blame the ACA for that?
Well, you know, I don't think that the high cost of prescription drugs. It was something that I think the ACA was going to come back and address. Mm-hmm. And we didn't, right? Because right after its passage, we were, you know, defending and protecting it, and it was slowly getting dismantled by the Republicans in this Congress. And so the opportunity to get back to the table and figure out how we add transparency to prescription drug pricing, how we enforce price gouging, how we make it more affordable for those, you know, medicines that people need is an important next step.
You know, you mentioned Nancy Pelosi, who was here earlier this week. You hosted a fundraiser with Nancy Pelosi. I wonder, if you were elected, would you support her as leader in the House?
You know, I do get this question quite a bit. Yeah. And so I first have to say, because I've admired her career. She, you know, the first woman Speaker of the House. What she's done for women and for working class families is really a model. I think a lot of us could emulate. But right now, I am 100% focused on getting elected. You know, someone reminded me the other day that, you know, the primary was long and hard fought. You know, I was the last named Democratic nominee in the country. So, you know, these weeks have been really spent getting ready for the November 6th election. But I look forward to making a decision and having those conversations about the leadership of the party after I get elected.
Just haven't made that decision quite yet. Okay, well, let's talk about policy a little bit. We spoke with your Republican challenger, Rick Green, on the show earlier this week, and we asked him to outline his views on some issues. He told us he is opposed to sanctuary cities and he supports greater border security. And he said this about background checks and gun legislation. Let's listen.
I'm a supporter of the Bill of Rights, which includes the 10th Amendment, which is, you know, states' rights. One size fits all coming out of D.C. to me is usually the wrong answer. Massachusetts has our laws, and the people of Massachusetts are very happy with them. At the same time, we wouldn't want to live under the laws of, say, Wyoming or Texas, but also understand that the people of Wyoming and Texas may not want to live under our laws.
Okay, so I wonder, Lori Trahan, what about you on background checks and gun legislation?
Yep, this is a point that we just disagree on. I do believe in universal background checks. I mean, I think that's a place where we could actually come together as a country, Republicans and Democrats, to solve a problem that is, you know, facing our country, facing our kids. You know, there's no reason why we shouldn't be doing the due diligence to make sure we're not selling a gun to somebody who could hurt themselves or hurt someone else. And frankly, you know, there's people who aren't cleared to fly our planes should not be able to own a gun. You know, I think I don't think that this is a state issue. I think this is something that we have to take up on the federal level, and I think it's important.
Another issue in the district, sanctuary cities. Where do you stand on those? Mr. Green's opposed to sanctuary cities.
Yeah. You know, I think this is a decision for communities, for individual communities. I've known Mayor Dan Rivera for a long time.
Lawrence Mayor.
Who I used to work with. And, you know, the other night we had a debate and my opponent came down really hard on the city of Lawrence and referenced a fentanyl bust that happened in the city. This notion that Mayor Rivera is not cooperating when those busts happen is just, it's wrong. I mean, he's as invested in bringing, you know, violent criminals to justice as anyone. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, this fear-mongering around, you know, fentanyl trafficking, targeting communities of color, this is where him and I don't see eye to eye. The role of Congress is to pass comprehensive immigration reform. That is our job. It's our laws are outdated. This is an area where Senators Kennedy and Senator McCain actually found a way to work together and pass a bill that not only strengthened our borders, but also, you know, addressed some of the problems with our immigration system, our acceptance criteria, evaluating, you know, how we seek how we evaluate asylum seekers, updating our visa program so it takes into account our skills gap and our American workers. That is the role of Congress, and that's the kind of productive conversation we should be having.
So you would support a city that would be a sanctuary city. Would you say that you would support a city's ability to declare itself a sanctuary city?
I believe right now that what Lawrence Mayor Rivera is doing is protecting nonviolent, undocumented immigrants who are going to the RMV and without notice getting picked up and separated from their family for really, you know, no reason. Mm-hmm. What he's not doing is you know, allowing violent criminals to live in his city. So, you know, what's right for Lawrence might not be right for Lowell, and I respect that that decision should be kept with local law enforcement and local officials.
The opioid epidemic, which has been an issue everywhere. Now, there was a bill. Actually, there was bipartisan agreement in Congress on an opioid bill very recently. What other things do you think that federal lawmakers need to do to address the opioid epidemic, or what would you like to try to work on regarding that issue?
Yes.
Do you have a specific plan at this point or not yet?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't travel far in this district and not be confronted with a heartbreaking story. And the reality is cities like Lowell, Lawrence, and Haverhill are disproportionately impacted by this epidemic. And, you know, certainly I think we need more funding. We need more federal resources. I mean, the bill that was passed that, you know, funded more medically assisted treatment and more comprehensive centers. I mean, it's a start, but we have to make Narcan more available. I mean, we have to keep people alive. We do have to put more funding behind medically assisted treatment. If there's anything I've learned, this is not something you beat with willpower alone. The recovery is long. So not only do we have to have a long-term approach, but we have to give people the skills that they need to get back on their feet, reunited with their families, into a good-paying job so that we decrease that relapse rate. Hmm.
The third district includes some of the communities affected by the Columbia gas explosion and that over-pressurization. If you were elected, what do you think Congress, what would you want Congress or try to get Congress to do for the affected communities there?
Yeah. So, you know, first and foremost, I think we have to see what this investigation surfaces. You know, there are too many questions right now around how this happened, how we maintain our pipelines, how we prevent this from ever happening again. You know, I'm mindful right now that what needs to be done is we have to accelerate this timeline for people to get their gas turned back on, because the reality is on Thursday night, I think I read the temperature is going to dip to 23 degrees. Mm-hmm. I mean, that means people need to be relocated very quickly into hotel rooms, into RVs. And I know that there's good planning in place right now, but we have to hold Columbia Gas accountable. We have to make sure that we have a plan in place to maintain our pipelines. And I think what another thing that it does is it shines a light on our urgency around transitioning to renewable energy.
Okay. Lori Trahan, Democratic candidate for Congress in the 3rd District. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Earlier this week, we spoke with the Republican in the race, Rick Green. You can find that conversation on our website, radioboston.org. Next week, we'll be joined by independent candidate Mike Mullen.